Welcome back to The Sidebar, a book club for failures. I'm David.
I'm Gabe, leader of the Goon Squad.
And I'm Capitalissimo.
And we're also joined by special guest, Miles. How are you doing, Miles?
Pretty good, man. Glad you had me on the show again. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. And just a reminder to everyone, we have two big reads coming up. Nutcracker by Dan Baltic and Incel by Arxhan, also known as Arakshan. Both of those we're going to be reading this month, so suggest picking them up and reading along with us if you're interested. Also, please consider giving a like, subscribe, a comment, anything like that helps the channel grow. And these are, for the most part, pretty high effort podcasts since we're, you know, reading a whole book for the recording, so it's much appreciated. And today we've gathered back around to discuss an article, though. This one was featured in Man's World, issue 11. The title is The Dissident Artist, A Case Study in Failure by Cosmosenix. And this came out a month or two back. I think this was like a July release. So it's been around. We all read it and talked about it at the time, but thought it might be useful to talk through again since we're all people that read and or write in this scene. A way of introduction, I'll just give...
David, you're being very humble. You're not mentioning that you do have an upcoming piece in the next issue of Man's World, correct?
Oh, well, now that you mention it, actually, you know, some of us are, you know, on the inside. And so I can tell you outsiders how it works here at Man's World magazine. But yeah, I do.
How to be a successful artist.
Yes, how to...
Straight from the horse's mouth.
As a professional failure as an artist, yeah, I do actually have an article coming out in late September. So anyone that, you know, in the inner editing group we have might recognize it as I Have No Life and I Must LARP.
Typical.
A play on I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Hopefully get a few more eyeballs on it. So yeah, super excited for that. And funny enough, we had this planned in advance that we were going to talk through this article. And I was actually reading the article again in prep for this, and I accidentally clicked the submission button. I was like, oh, I'll just submit something, and that's how that came about. So I would definitely suggest if you're someone that has some writing lying around, you know, they need people that are willing to contribute, so, you know, give it a good edit pass and submit. You probably have a better chance than you'd think and get some more eyeballs on it.
Will my essay on gooming in cemeteries be accepted?
Well, Man's World has kind of a Nietzschean bent. I think, you know, I think I have like a Spengler quote in my article. So you might want to like throw in some of that terminology and you probably would get in.
The erection of the West.
after the decline of the West comes the refractory period of the West, which comes with the subsequent second rise of the West.
And so, yeah, with that out of the way, let's jump into the article. I would recommend anyone that listens to this, give it a read. It's free online. I'll link it post. But if you haven't, you know, we'll summarize the key points, so you'll be fine either way. But it's a pretty brief read. I would guess it's 1,000, 1.5K words, something like that. So pretty snappy article. And he fits a pretty good amount into that space. So... The three main parts of it. He has a framing. He has sort of two key suggestions he makes to anyone who considers themselves a dissident artist. And then at the end, he has some consolation, I guess, and suggestions on how to move forward, practical suggestions. And so let's dive in right now with just the intro, the framing. So I would summarize this as him saying repeatedly that you will not receive right-wing donor support. Did you guys have anything else that you saw here or any reaction to this part?
Yeah, that was basically the first block. The first block is like anyone who's conservative, like capital C conservative, who describes himself as conservative, hates you and will literally not give a shit about you or your work. That's basically the first three paragraphs of this.
There's a single quote I pulled, which if I had one criticism of the article, is that this part was a little too long for the same point. And so I think this summarizes it pretty nicely. He says, all of this should help the aspiring right-leaning artists understand that the cavalry are not coming. There will be no air support. You are on your own. Peter Thiel is not going to wave a magic wand, I'll say it ain't so, bro, and make you the next Elvis, even if you are the next Elvis. So he gives a bunch of more detailed examples of, who was the chick in Mandalorian?
Gina Carano.
Yeah, like Gina Carano and a couple other people. You know, you have your Crowders of the world and your... who's the Indian? Who was that young Indian fella?
Dinesh D'Souza.
Vivek Vivek, he achieved much.
Not Vivek. The one from the Goan one, the one with the Portuguese.
Yeah,
last
not the
name.
Not the beat. Well, no, I think the Goans are the beat shitters. So I think it was the beat shitter guy, who, you know, makes just sort of conservatard clickbait, and yeah, and to me this part, I have nothing I can say to disagree with it. Obviously, it's true. One linguistic tick I noted is he still referred to them as our quote unquote donors or like our guys. Even though at an intellectual level, I think he identifies that they're separate, but it just to me was an interesting, there seemed to be still some, I guess, bitterness, understandably, that these people are throwing money at this very lowest common denominator shit.
He did have, I do think that he also, you know, there were a couple like just slightly, I think maybe factually inaccurate things. Because I did Google I've done my own research, so I Googled some of the examples he gave, and Rex Sinkfield was mentioned as funding a concert pianist who is a Black Lives Matter supporter, and the reason why he did that is because one of Rex Sinkfield's projects is donating to things in in his hometown, which is St. Louis. So it's sort of like criticizing the Walton family for, you know, buying non-right-wing or non-capitalistic art to go in Crystal Bridges in Northwest Arkansas, because you're missing the point of the spend there. They're not optimizing for the political activity or for any political content in the work. They're optimizing for whatever local cultural thing that they're trying to do, right? And, you know, if you're a billionaire and you want to spend money to get some cultural thing that you want off the ground, you don't have to have taste to do that, right? You just hire someone to curate it. And it's like, who's big and will get this in the news and will get us respect? It's like, okay, yeah, okay, so you go buy a overpriced piece of shit derivative Damien Hirst piece so that you can say
it's a pure
Damien
status
Hirst's
signal
name in your collection.
Yeah,
right?
And that status is set left-wise.
Yeah. I don't know what Damien Hirst's politics are, but he definitely likes making money.
No, your point about the Walton family, it's very true. Like, when you, it's any pour in the storm and anything local, you're doing anything local, you're not doing it for politics, you're doing it for the cash or the local effect. And what you said about that is doubly true here in Texas, because we do have a donor class here in Texas, but the boomers here of the money, the oil money, the industry money that is in Austin money, they spend that shit on like high schools, building like the biggest high schools in the country, because they're trying to relive their glory days, or stuff like that. They could easily make their own like Daily Wire or their own Blaze TV or whatever the hell. They could if they wanted to, but they don't. A lot of the boomers, they still have the 80s mindset. They still have what Mike Pence said in the debates. It's morning again in America, wherever that shit. They still think like, oh, we're winning, we can win. You know, so they just kind of focused on, I just want to grill. That's their nexus. There literally is their nexus. Like, oh, we're going to spend money in the suburbs, an HEB, a school, a playground. They're not going to fund, you know, like a dissident poetry circles. So what he says about there is profoundly true.
The lines aren't always clear. And certainly anyone on the left would not, I feel like they would be more careful with their spending not to fund someone right-leaning. But people on the right are more omnivores, like the donor class, but they're not, they definitely don't identify and prioritize anyone that's dissident. And I think my point in highlighting his linguistic fallback of calling them our guys, our elite, or our, you know, rich class is, I think they just don't see themselves that way. And so anyone associating with this circle, as Cosmo already intellectually identifies them as completely separate, but I think we just need to reinforce in ourselves, as he says in the article himself, you know, the cavalry's not coming, they're not going to support you. So, okay, I think that summarizes that first part pretty well. It was, yeah, just a lot of specific examples all to that same point. And then really what I would consider the heart of the article is his two key suggestions. The first being, to cross out the dissident and just be an artist. And it's a very interesting suggestion. Let me just quote directly from the article again. "The best art speaks for itself and does not need an explanation. As its power to inspire should supersede any descriptive words, going by dissident will almost inevitably lead to prejudgment by patrons and audience, or give you undeserved credit by pockets of anons who can impede growth. Leave the labels to the commentariat. Your job is to create. Their job is to analyze, criticize, demonize, scandalize, categorize, summarize, publicize, and theorize." And I think that's probably the most interesting point of the article. I agree with it at the point. It's something we've referenced a few times about overly political, directly political. You guys have phrased it in better ways, but I'm thinking specifically about our Double Dealer review. But this topic came up a few times about some of the short stories.
That you don't totally agree that things being nakedly didactic detracts from the art of the thing?
So I agree with the art being nakedly political is a negative. I don't think you can be non-dissident in the way he describes and have success. I think you would have more issues that he doesn't quite describe. And it kind of goes into this. Okay, well, let me describe the second point, and then before I get into my further thought on it. What was the second suggestion? Maybe I didn't write that down.
It literally is just be beautiful, be amazing. Do not post, like, if you got to gain influence before you do anything even right-wing. So it's not even do not present yourself as right-wing,
yeah,
and do not behave or engage in right-wing activities. Because if you get a spot and then you lose it, you've done nothing but actually harm yourself and the movement. You got to make sure you're secure, even remotely secure, if you want to get something to like a James Wood or another, or like you got to secure yourself firmly before you can actively posit right-wing beliefs.
Yeah, so crossing out dissident and basically disconnecting from the clickbait world. And I agree with it to the extent, and I think it's a good goal not to view yourself within the lens. But I guess my point is, as a growth measure in the real world, like, how have people actually had success? And I feel like it's actually has been through a level of branding and tribal identity with, you know, me Grug, me right side tribe, or dissident tribe to be more specific, if you want to experience growth there. I don't know. There's a lot of, I guess, directions we could take this, but I guess I want to hear your guys' raw thoughts first before I interject too much.
Well, I agree with, like, all his criticisms are true, but all of his, like, antidotes are also false. If you notice, all the, like you said, all the right-wing dissident artists who make it, like, he says, oh, you gotta separate your life from the artist. You can't be, and this is later on in the piece, so forgive me for this, but he says something along the lines of, oh, you don't want to be one of those artists who lives for their art, or, like, art as performance art, life as performance art. You know, you don't be a ripoff of BAP, right? He says this. He says, oh, it's tacky. But in reality, especially with people with a right-wing mindset or conservative mindset, we're very personality-based. We're very, like, the fundamentally Spanglerian essence of craving a
count
Caesar,
one.
Creating a one man.
Spangler.
Especially with the successful artists. Yes. And many more to come. Many more, because it actually kind of ties into this. There's a Spangler piece in Man's World, actually. But
count two.
If you notice, all the successful artists, right? Dan Baltic, BAP.
Sam Hyde.
Yes, they live their art. They're totally indistinguishable from art. And for anyone who's actually interested in this piece, I highly, highly, highly recommend the essays and the lectures from one Jonathan Bowden, because he talks about the right-wing anarch. Because he talks about this in art. If you notice, almost every classical right-winger, Ernst Jünger, Yukio Mishima, Ernst von Salomon, Nietzsche, who are considered esoteric by their own times, they're aristocrats of the soul, right? They live their art. That's also the reason why we don't get any funding. Is the person who is both inherently right-wing or aristocratic or reactionary in temperament is fundamentally a reactionary and therefore fundamentally different. He's an anarch. They are fundamentally not cohesive-oriented. They do their own thing, right? And so you have the right-wing anarchs, which are us, basically, because, you know, we're literary minded. We go against the grain. We go against the consensus of the GOP, right? And the GOP, they're stuck in this silent majority mindset, like that plague of a mindset about, oh, we're the majority. We don't have to rock the boat. You know, if you gave Bronze Age mindset to a Reagan voter in 1989, they would think, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? They always have this internal sunshine mindset. And you know, Spengler talks about this, actually, in the essay In Man's World, where the Greek thinks time is internal, that the history never ends. And that's the boomer American mindset. The Americana mindset is, you know, we're just one more election away from 1982, and, you know, Reagan's going to win in a landslide. But in reality, what we suffer in is that basically we have no silent majority. They're all dead, and their grandchildren hate us. And to be the right-wing anarch is to accept the fact that you are surrounded by all sides, culturally, spiritually, and physically. And you have to live your art. You have to go the BAP route. You have to say no to modernity in its fullness. You get this. He kind of advocates for this one foot in, one foot out. Let the art speak for itself. True. But if you want to let your art speak for yourself and let it be completely dissident, you know, you can just write a story for, like, let's say, Mixtape Hyperborea. Right? That's not political at all. Not really. The guys talk like a white guy from the early 2000s. But when you have a character and have a plot based on white guys from the early 2000s, that's not going to get published. So you're fundamentally, that you don't have that ant smell. You're going to have those, that pheromonal enemy. The friend and enemy distinction is internal. So when you have this, you kind of have to take the one step beyond and go full parody or full like BAP or like full Mishima or Junger. You got to lean into the archetype in a sense.
I agree. I mean, I agree to an extent that, you know, and I mean, also just from a logistical standpoint, how can you actually carry that off? Can you actually create art that's successful enough while completely screening your true intentions and thoughts? And if you can, right? So if you can, this is really like some of the advice comes down to. No, you got to get in and then you take it down from the inside. But how does that actually work, right? Like how does that in fact work? And the answer is it fucking
has it ever worked?
It does not happen, because what happens is, oh, yeah. I'm a successful artist. Oh, and this thing that I'm doing is working, and I oh fuck. Now I'm making money, and this is how I buy food and keep a roof over my head. So I guess I'm going to keep doing this. So I'm not going to blow up my own spot, right? And furthermore, this happens in every single time some sort of more radically minded person gets involved in conventional politics, like party politics, which is why the GOP and indeed the DNC are not paths to lasting positive change, is because they'll co-opt it. Right? They'll completely co-opt it. And anyone who manages to be successful in those dissident scenes and gets into the party will ultimately just go native, because all of their incentives are lined up with going native. So don't you just turn
into... Or you end
up
like Morrissey.
Well, but, you know, Morrissey probably like... I think that a lot of people who, you know, are successful in music or in film and then turn out to be hashtag our guys, right?
Mel Gibson for one.
Mel Gibson. Mm-hmm. Like he was probably not always like that, actually. Right? He probably, either he was just so atavistic that he held the same thoughts while the rest of the industry left him behind, or he just like changed his mind and through crazy happenstance he was this part of the small minority whose mind changed to be, you know, what he thinks.
He was always Catholic, if I recall correctly.
His dad was a very vocal Holocaust denier too.
Oh, really? Oh, well. Yeah, Mel Gibson, the disastrously based Mel Gibson.
but look at that. Mel Gibson is the greatest example of a person who has influence in Hollywood, who can stand his ground.
But who had.
Who
had.
He can still make movies. He's making Christ 2, right? He's making the sequel to Christ, right?
I mean, he's a bit of a counterpoint to this article because, you know, he is not doing that with his own money, I am sure, right? He's got the big dick donor. Obviously, he's only got the big dick donor because he already had a name, but... Mm-hmm.
And he has his own wealth, too. I think he's also... He's bankrolling it. He bankrolled a lot of Christ 1, I think, too, as well.
Well, he definitely made that back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but look at this. If you do... Let's say you do what the article says. You know, you hide your power levels. You make art. But yet again, just by the nature of osmosis. You know, art as being acceptable by industry standards. So, radically to the left of 10 years ago. So, you're making centrist art in reality that isn't centrist. And if you work up your foundation just enough, they'll let you have one Christian movie and maybe a little mildly pro-vigilante film, like A Drag Across Concrete, which is a good movie. Or like a Tim Allen where he says gun control is not the greatest thing ever. You're allowed a milquetoast 2009 Tea Party opinion. And that's about it. You're not allowed to have Murdoch.
It is... We have to also remember that he's talking about a really broad spectrum of artists. And so as word sells, like I think we lean towards like thinking of books and stuff. But if you're an actor, like imagine being an actor, you know, and you want to act, it's got to be such a small pool. And I think maybe in that case, this advice is the right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he recommends two women. One woman who wrote a book on acting. It's like he complains. He actually disses Lomez from Passes Press. Oh, we have nothing for love for our good Lord Lomez. Please publish our stuff. Basically, he wrote two books. One is a Yiddish actress, and he recommended another book for writers. He randomly slots in
It was a screenplay, yeah, I believe screenplay. One of them was. I'm glad you mentioned that because I love that he shit on Lomez. I also have nothing but worshipful thoughts for Lomez, but it's nice to see people taking stabs at each other in this. It's not in a low way, but it's just a point.
Well, yeah, sorry, no, I agree with you, but the book he recommends for us writers due to Waters' block is The Artist's Way, a spiritual path for higher creativity, with the first blurb being, without the artist's way, there will be no eat, play, love. Elizabeth Gilbert. This is the advice, distant man, you're getting.
I'll jump in and actually defend The Artist's Way. So I've been dealing with a long-term writer's block, especially in long-form novels, and I found that the actual core of The Artist's Way is really built for a beginner artist and a beginner writer, because the actual idea behind it is that you're actually afraid to make your art, and that's what's causing writer's block. Now, the best thing you can actually take from this book is the fact that in the mornings when you get up, you write three pages. You basically word vomit. And what that does is it streamlines your thoughts. It pulls all the junk out of your system. The other thing that they recommend is to go on an artist's date once a week, which is basically go to an art museum just by yourself or go to the library and find a new book, right? It's shit that, as David said earlier, us word cells would just do automatically. So in terms of like, well, Doy, you're supposed to do that, I'll kind of give him a pass. But I think if more people did at least the pages in the morning or in the afternoon or at night, just something sort of akin to journaling, it doesn't even have to be consistent, coherent thought, just to get the gunk out of the brain from the 9 to 5, from dealing with your family, from dealing with all the bullshit that happens online, it actually does allow your creative juices to flow a lot smoother.
No, I'm not denying the advice. It was just being a little cheeky at his citations for aid.
Yeah, I suppose it's like recommending a Julia Child's cookbook, you know?
No, but that's the problem with the right, is you have to recommend this. You know what I mean? The right is so low entropy, or high entropy, rather, where you have to tell this to people. You know what I mean? If you had a leftist, if you go to a Bernie bro in Boston, yeah, right, or holding writing competitions, Do you have to recommend this book? Do you have to go through all these steps? Or you just say, hey, we're taking admissions.
Yes, no, because they read they more take than admissions, they write.
And you just say, admissions open, everyone floods in. With the right, it's a vanguard, right? It's fundamentally asocial. It's fundamentally anti-herd, right? So you have a handful of schizos and autists. Some of them are, like, more political oriented, and you have to teach them how to write. That's why you use, like, this book, or for example, Step by Step, The Autistic Way. And only a handful are actually purely artistically inclined and went in through art first, then politics. Yeah. That's why he has to kind of do this kind of, you know, step-by-step guide. Because a lot of the people he's talking to are people, let's be honest, who put the politics first to begin with.
And that's what really bugs me about this article, is that he writes all the time about, you got to put politics aside, focus on the art. And the whole time I'm thinking, I only focus on the art. And when the politics gets in the way, I get upset. When someone, you know, like you were talking about earlier with the white guy from the 2000s, it's inherently political. For me, if I had just written that piece by myself, politics would never even enter the equation because I'm an artist first and a political dissident second, though I really still don't consider myself much of one. And it bugs me that we have this crosstalk of basically the political Twitter sphere, people who maybe want to make a cash grab off of right-wing grifting, which has been very common these past couple of years, or people who, I don't know, read The Prince once and decided to become a philosopher. I don't want to say these people shouldn't be making art, but they're going into it with an incorrect mindset of advancing a political ideology than using art for art's sake, for whatever personal discovery purposes that they need for
themselves.
Right,
and the thing is, any of you detach all politics, right, and just go full, you get Comicsgate, you get Razor Fists, you know what I mean? Look at Comicsgate.
And they all fucking
They all suck. Right? It's very staccato, no depth. They hate, what word? They love saying, what, 10-cent words? There's this weird fucking redneck term for, like, actual words of depth and meaning and complexity. They hate complexity, right? That's the also big problem.
Here's the core argument I wanted to make about that, actually, is it's extremely effective at actually getting readers relative to the pure art form. So the challenge, the way I see it, is almost like two tiers of mass art production, right? There's like a small but successful strategy of influencer-based grifting, if you want to call it that, social media-based. It's political oriented. Or it's like reaction. It's getting these like dopamine hits to react into. We're going to beat the libtards by giving money to ISOM. that's the big thing for them for that week, and that has a lot of like weird social dynamics. Like the, you know, unable to criticize allies, back padding. Everyone's a guest host. Everyone's nice, and is effective on a small scale, but it doesn't scale up well because it doesn't encourage quality at the art level. It encourages in-group, out-group. It's inherently sort of aggressive to an audience outside of its initial fan base. And then in contrast to that, there's like the big brand model, which is like more craft-focused. There is a political dimension. And now I'm thinking of like, you know, the big three, four, whatever, how many publishers they've like minimized it to now. Those guys at that level, they can focus on craft in theory to quite a high extent, and then they can just reject people from all the people that submit to them. And so I see there's almost like this two-tier system, and that's why I feel bad complaining at Cosmo's points, because I agree with a lot of them about disengaging from it, not being overly directly politically derivative. But at the same time, in terms of practical growth, I feel like there's this small but successful strategy that we're trapped in as a quote unquote community, as a scene. And then there's this more higher ideal of like what the big guys do. And I just don't see how to bridge that gap. And I see his suggestions as interesting, but I don't see them quite working out.
There's a degree to which there is a model that isn't really super touched on, or that is not touched on, and that is absent from this piece, which is effectively what a lot of dissident artists in the rightist space are following, which is anonymity prior to success, right? So people will write under pseudonyms until they have a sufficient artist and then remove the veil. And it's not just artists, it's also thinkers. Theoretically, I don't believe that so obviously BAP has been doxxed, and I'm not sure that, say, like Raw Egg Nationalist has been doxxed.
He's been face doxxed. He went on Alex Jones, I believe.
You're right. Obviously Moldbug Yarvin revealed his own identity. Lomez, as far as I'm aware, but yeah, but it didn't turn out poorly for him. It turned out great for him, and it allowed him to. It didn't prevent him from furthering his, his dark elf plans in Dime Square, right? It didn't stop it. So, Lomez has not been doxxed, to my knowledge, yet. But I mean, eventually he's probably gonna have to reveal, because he seems like he's got a career here. So, I don't know if he's gonna reveal his true identity at the Passage Prize party next year, if that happens.
No, he's been at parties already. I mean, BAP managed to go on Red Scare and like hang out with Anna Kachuta in real life and not get doxxed yet. I mean,
BAP is doxxed. Everyone knows who BAP is.
No, okay. Other than old photos of him, though. A, he's kept on the mystique. Like, he keeps his BAP energy up. He's never confirmed nor deny it. Right? He's keeping like the hyper meta performance art stick going. So you're always left to kind of wonder. And there's no pictures of him yet. Like, not in one of these events. They must do like the whole give me your phone thing, because I know for a fact BAP has been in a few of these events, I think, and him, Yarvin, Lomez, many people have been at parties and events like this in Dime Square scenes, and there's no fresh images of them anywhere on the internet.
Wait, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but are you, Cap, what's your argument? This is a negative thing?
No, I'm saying that it's really not anonymity, it's pseudonymity, is not a approach that is mentioned in this article, right? But that's the dominant one. Like, that's the one that's actually, that's the one that's being pursued most popularly in the dissident writing scene at this moment, where people adopt pseudonyms. I mean, Cosmo Senex, I'm pretty sure that's not what his mom calls him.
I mean, maybe right? He's like Kramer.
Cosmo is a real first name. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Cosmo is a real first name. Anyway,
I agree. And it's by art. I think that's maybe the thing. Like, again, an actor couldn't get away with that via having a pseudonym for writers. And actually, I guess a lot of art, even like digital art or painting.
Digital art you can get away with. Paintings you'd need. Yeah. You could not really get away with. You'd need an agent.
Third party.
Yeah, but I mean, theoretically, Banksy's never been, revealed.
But he swims left, so.
Well, yes, but he is. It's pure marketing. Obviously, his work has been completely co-opted and is now fully commercialized and commoditized. But he was successful. He was successful, and he did not reveal his true identity, and he can walk down the street and no one mobs him. Mm-hmm. So, and he got his bag.
True. That is true. And the closest thing we have on that side, the sculptor, painter, we're world cells, right? We are word cells, but we'll try to, like they mentioned Fen de Ville, the sculptor. Mm-hmm. Like he had an exhibition, right? But why does he have an exhibition? Because there's members of the new right, the tech right, right? That funded that exhibition. Right, Lomez gives him. He was the sculptor judge or visual artist judge on Passage Press. Right, Lomez made his money in tech. I believe he even says this. He made money in the tech industry before he became Lomez. So it's the death of the boomer, the day of the pillow. Right, the only time right dissident art we're embryos. there's a lot of people we're thinking too fast. Even the distance side of things, we think, oh my God, this is a turning point. We gotta, you know, we gotta be based world. We gotta bring back based world. We gotta be based world, right? The thing is, it's most likely not gonna be in our generation. You know, Yarvin says it best. We're acorns. We're embryos. It's gonna be at least 1 to 2 generations before, if anything, to a true indie scene, where, you know, at least, you know, Miami, some parts of Texas, some parts of Cali or Utah have their own version of Dime Square, right? Or Wyoming, right? You know, so we have to realize we're in an embryonic state. We have to wait for the day of the pillow. We have to wait for a new generation of a Patriot network, because we're going to be patrons. We don't have organizations. We have individuals. Mark Anderson pays for some of our scene substacks. I've seen, you know, goes on certain podcasts and stuff like that. We're individual based. So we have to, it's like the Borgias. Yep. Certain families in the Renaissance Italy funded certain individuals. It's going to be individual and individual cases. Certain families of the dissident right in the future will be funding stuff like us. But it will take at least a generation and a half. There's no, do X, Y, and Z steps now. It's no, do X, Y, and Z's, wait a generation, then you have some ground to work on.
Agree. It's just, we're heading into the desert. We're not going to see the promised land if there ever is. Might just get ground up into pulp. There's one other part of this I want to respond to, the quote I'd read earlier about letting art speak for itself. And that's the last sentence where he talks about, your job is just to create the art. The commentariat's job is to analyze, criticize all the other eyeses. And to tie it back to my earlier comment about the internet tier world and that reactosphere is you need a commentariat. And there isn't really a commentariat. That's something in our small way we're hoping to contribute to and help grow. But for the broader circle, it really is you can come up with this great, you know, Nutcracker-esque the project, you know, and throw it out there, and you could very well just go out and get 3 sales on Amazon and on Amazon print on demand.
That's basically what mixtape is, right? That's
yes, for boys. Yes, yeah, brilliant novel, really, really fun read. For anyone that still hasn't read it, that listens to this, absolutely, just pick it up, bruh. But yeah, I think we're probably one of like maybe 100 people that have read it, and that's just an audience thing, and a commentariat. It's just, I don't know, it's such a messy relationship between politics and this, because I 100% agree with Cosmo's framing of there's the distractive sphere of Twitter and other places where it's all rage, response, bait, dopamine-inducing, look at this TikTok of a girl getting punched in the face and an old lady falls down the stairs, or, you know, shit like that. But or you know, oh, the West has fallen, here's an Arab guy walking on a beach. That stuff that people just spam all day long. But that's what gets engagement, and that is quote unquote political. And so you have to, I don't know, there's some kind of messy connection between that sphere and building the quote unquote a commentariat that can actually respond to these things, because as is, you're just not going to get picked up by the existing commentariat, and the current commentariat that's semi-forming, that we are in a way part of, but I think we're trying to separate ourselves from, is so is part of the social media dynamic in terms of praising books that people haven't read or like half read, and just saying it's good because this guy has more followers.
If you don't have a Twitter, you don't exist.
Yeah, and that's how I feel for us, like, because we started dabbling in Twitter to connect to some people, and you definitely feel the e-celeb hierarchy is in place.
It is a feature, right? Whether you know, without making a value judgment, it's a feature. And the problem is that having the political dynamic enforces and encourages a hug box sort of environment. But hug boxes don't build quality. They don't judge quality. They build loyalty. And they build spheres of influence. And so you're really just creating whatever the right-wing dude version of a longhouse is with that kind of environment.
The meat hole. It's the meat hole.
The meat hole.
Yeah.
That's amazing, Gabe. enter the meat hall, you got to pat your bro on the back and tell him his shitty short story is Spenglerian.
Yes.
Genius.
It's Faustian. You know, that.
Well, see, I don't think there's anything wrong with being able, like, with patting your bro on the back and saying that his short story that attempts to be Spenglerian is fucking dog shit and he needs to go back and do it again. Right. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that you can like all tangibly contribute to a project while not encouraging mediocrity or being unfairly critical. Like I think you can actually be collaborative and constructive with criticism, literally with criticism as a critical component of the construction.
True, but quality control should be private. You should have a unified front. Like, you know, we talk about, we all agree that the back scratching.
I guess we'll never publish another podcast.
It's over.
It's Jover.
It's so over.
You know, we talk bad about the back scratching, but I'm literally looking at a copy of Hemingway's A Movable Feast right now. And you have to realize, you know, the entirety of the 1920s film writing scene was Ezra Pound's drinking buddies. You know, we would not have Joyce.
Yeah. I was about to say that exact
Joyce
same thing.
Joyce and Pound liked each other. Joyce could not write.
And they all
yes,
liked
they all liked each other. And Joyce could take 6 months on a 3 cent short story, right? And would basically burn every money he had, right? He was. If we were with him today, you know, if a modern day Joyce was inside WG, or you had to be editor of his work, Miles, you would fucking want to strangle his ass, right?
I know, I'd want to strangle him because he's me. I'm Joyce.
how are them? Literally how me. Are them? Nora parts.
The reincarnation.
Oh, my lady.
At dirtiest little fuckbird ever memorialized in the private letters of a literary giant.
There's one of his where he asks her basically like take a dump in the closet or something. It's like the most skin crawling thing I've ever read of an author that I really respect.
Listen, you wouldn't get it. All right? Hearts are a Faustian fetish. All right, you wouldn't get it.
No, just shut the fuck up.
A child of winter cannot understand a summer fetish. All right,
you're so fucking retarded.
But no, but basically that's true though. Pound would criticize people privately, but we are part of a scene. A scene is collectively back scratching. You know, he would constantly make excuses for Joyce. He would constantly say, he would constantly get his pieces written in, even though it's half assed or a rough draft or something like that. And it worked out in the end because we got fucking James Joyce, the fart aficionado, right? We got him. Right? Or same thing with F. Scott Fitzgerald or Hemingway. These people were messes. They would
But that's an effective commentary at critical class working, right? And the whole issue now is that there's a dysfunctional one that's running the big four. And so now people are trying to rise up into it. And it's this really messy period where there is no clear. I guess Lomez would probably be the closest at all within the scene of like in his like inner circle.
Oh, yeah. No, Passage
but
is
I don't
favorite.
Think they have wide credibility. Yeah. They probably are the best so far.
Because they actually have real life.
I mean, there's no Harold Bloom. There's no Ezra Pound in the modern day right now.
We have Charles Haywood. He does book reviews.
Suppose if you consider him the rule of thumb on what is good or not.
No.
Literature.
He spends half his reviews talking about politics and political theory.
Of course. And so we go back to the dissident artist.
True. Astro talks about like a Athenian stranger. The thing is, they do it in Twitter spaces. Again, the dissident art scene is held on the backs of Twitter, right? They talk about art all the time, just in Twitter spaces, and they talk very good. They speak a lot, like, you know, Moby Dick, and they talk about the artistry of the man and the white whale and all these things. They talk beautifully, but they just don't write it down because they do it as a communal element. The public, the things you write down has to be some political aspect. While the communal hanging out with my bros, we could just focus on the art.
Yeah, something that you would normally see at a drinking party in Paris 100 years ago.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, Hemingway and Fitzgerald will talk about each other's dick sizes, you know? It was great.
Well, yeah. poor Fitzgerald had a problem.
And that's
because
he had
his
a small
wife was
dick.
A schizophrenic and tried to kill his daughter. She had troubles.
You just know that pussy was good, though.
No, that's not
Hemingway
why.
Said it was just the angle. You just had to use a pillow.
It was a normal-sized penis. That's what Hemingway said.
He compared it to the statues in like an art gallery or the Louvre or something. He's like, yeah, you know, compared to them. Compared to Cupid.
Those are famously small.
Yeah, they.
As
so
a penis historian, I can verify.
Well, I would like to say that's what we're lacking. The lost generation at least had a professional penis inspector in Hemingway. We have no penis inspectors today.
Yeah.
We need a busty white woman.
Oh,
so
God.
A
busty white man.
Look, fellas, I'm not going to whip it out in front of you guys. A busty
Listen,
white man. Some dude with a 45-inch
woman
barrel
in a longhouse, man. We need BAP. We need the Caribbean rhythms. We need the Bronze Age piracy inspection. That's all we need.
Your mead meat inspection, bro. It's time. Let's do it.
Throw it on the table,
dude. The mead hall. The mead hall fucking sucks. I'm going back to the longhouse.
But I guess my point about we have, I guess, a rising commentariat very early, very. There's not a clear tastemakers yet, and there's people that are pushing for it, but you know none of us are, you know, believers in democracy, at least to the hilt, and so I think we can all accept that there's a level of like classism. Like for example, Lomez and his ilk literally just bought the right to be tastemakers, right? They just threw down $20,000 or whatever the amount was for passage prize and said, we're going to judge people now with this sack of money. And all of a sudden, they are the most prestigious.
But that's a good thing,
circle.
Though. It's actually a good thing that they're putting their skin in the game.
Yeah, yeah, it is legitimizing because money's the fucking best. And when there's like, you know, I mean, if you're talking about the raw use of power in a distributable way, that's money. That's just fucking money. So. The ability to you know drop down the bag like that is absolutely,
and that's $20,000 every year, by the way.
Legitimizes
it is,
and it legitimizes the entire not and it doesn't just legitimize them. It legitimizes the entire process, the entire like cultural project. Yeah, the entire cultural project of the dissident right is legitimized by having, you know, even this you know this is a very modest literary prize, like let's be very clear, in the grand scheme of things it's small, but it's critical sort of have a beachhead, and that's they have said as much that's their intention, right? They want to collect the best in one spot rather than a bunch of, a bunch of small literary magazines that are getting published either entirely online or in online and in print or, you know, I mean, and that's MAD, that's Man's World, and that's AMP, and that's the projects that the other projects that arose from 4chan, and that's the things like the Double Dealer, and it's, it makes sense that they would want to do that, because it aligns with the overall cultural project of, cultivating
it's
a
pure
vanguard,
like the 2080 rule, right? And like the thing is, we're anticipation. Like when everyone sees like Passage Press, the official Twitter, drop a Nick Land quote, everyone's like, "Hey, when Xenosystem's coming out?" You know, everyone's looking to them. Like, okay, what's their next big thing? Everyone when they see Passage Prize 3, when that comes out, it's going to be a big splash. You know, Astro's going to have a podcast. They're going to go to R. McIntyre.
You know.
I had one more item related to the article I think I want to cover. And then I did want to just do an overview of the last bit, which we didn't really go into detail on, but it's just because I think he had some nice suggestions overall. The last point relative to the, you know, the crossing out dissident and just be an artist point is like the way this originates is people come to this, it's literally reactionary, is that people, you know, don't like what's being put out. because of political reasons, whether that's direct quote unquote political electoral or political as in, I just, you know, I don't like the way culturally things are going. People go and seek out an alternative space and they come here and then they see there's art being made. And so there's also that disconnect where there's people aren't coming with the same artistic taste. And so there isn't this single cohesive vision even there. And that's singularly attracting people as people are coming due to like biomarkers and, you know, disgust, instinct levels and, you know, all this complex milieu of behavioral patterns. And then they arrive and then they see the art. And so all that to say,
you mean people who started noticing and then they're like, wait, I have to read these.
Yeah,
books.
Exactly. It's like, dude, I just wanted to shit post about Jews all day. I just wanted to say, ban the ADL. Yeah.
I had to do homework.
Oh man. Now I got to read Mixtape Hyperborea.
Written by a Jew.
Oh, by a Jewish guy.
Wait a minute. There's Jews all over.
All our thought leaders are
I'm
Jews.
Noticing in the dissident right sphere.
Oh, what does Mencius Moldbug say about this?
Whoa!
Always has been, kid. Always has been. Anyway, that was my last comment on that sort of initial heart of the article. Do you guys have anything else about his two suggestions of, you know, crossing out dissident and disconnecting from the reactosphere Twitter space?
I obviously do agree to the extent that, you know, I use a pseudonym. in terms of the crossing out the, you know, showing your power level, mm-hmm. and adopting those titles. Getting out of the Twitter sphere in the sense of avoiding distraction and actually doing the work is certainly one thing. Getting out of it and cutting yourself off from an ability to extend your reach and be noticed and actually like engage with art, that seems very self-defeating.
Yeah, seems I agree with you.
Damn near impossible.
If I were to give our own advice, you know, since we're so successful in this scene, obviously, hey, one of us is getting a Man's Worth magazine, so
I've made it, bros. I've made it. I've been on Real. I'm in Amp. I'm in Man's World. I've the Chud trifecta.
Oh yeah, you can. So you can just cease trying.
Rest on my laurels.
These are the laurels. Yeah, 4 touchdowns in a single game.
You're officially the New Yorker of the dissident right scene. We're officially there, boys.
Oh, right, dude. Once we get 50 subs, I'm calling it. Then I'm just retiring.
Yeah, we'll immediately switch to Patreon.
Hey guys, we're. GoFundMe, raise $1,000 or no more episodes.
$10,000 and we get a date with Dasha at the Red Scare.
Oh, God, I wish that were me.
No interest in that.
I want to go on a date, dude. I want to go on a date with her just so I can tell her how much iodine she needs to be taking to take care of those dark circles.
You are very concerned about like her probable anemia.
Listen, she has more things to worry about.
Someone's
got
to take care of this girl.
Listen, look at her skull shape.
Tumors are telling her it's good.
About, all right. She's got that jelly bean.
She's got that Göbekli Tepe skull shape, if you know what I mean.
Literally trace it.
The jelly bean.
No, she's my wife. She will bear my children. But anyway, back. So I'm holding in my hands right now.
Creep.
Something that means a lot to me. It's a collection of Spandrel's blog posts, Bloody Shovel. And to people who don't know, Spandrel was a good friend of Nick Land. And he's the one who actually coined the term IQ Shredder. And positive theory. And
okay.
when you open this book, he's constantly referencing other bloggers in every page, and you have to go through the Internet Archive, and it's like Goethe going to Italy and seeing the Arcadian remnants of like Athens, or like Keats talking about odes on the Grecian urn, you know, the pots of Homer. And in a lot of ways, our scene has a heritage. Instead of bitching about. Is a hick lib, the next hick lib anthem, is the, or the trailer park is the new frontier. You know, instead of focusing on trailer trad wives or hick lib singers or wherever the fuck, you know, we have a heritage. You have a heritage. You have a line of thought. No matter what people say, we do. And in a lot of ways, you can continue the tradition. You can either bitch on Twitter. Twitter's important. Twitter is an intrinsic part of the dissident culture. You can't be out Twitter. But or you can use it to do junk food, which is bitch about the latest hot topic, even the whole Trump thing to a degree. Or you can go on Substack, you know, read us, read Catgirl Kulak, Fiddler Green, and just reference them. Have a dialogue, form a community. Right, less than 10 people are going to read your shit. Less than 100 people are going to read theirs. But that's going to stay there. When you have one person reading you across 100 people, or at least even 10 people, you know, the small elite vanguard will defeat any disorganized mass. So, just like with the blogosphere, right? The entire dissident right scene, it's a collective mess over an organized elite from 10 years ago. You know what I mean? All of our opinions. I mean, you have people criticizing the Constitution, saying the Constitution is fake and gay, and it's the most popular right-wing opinion on Twitter. And shit, people have been saying this 10 years ago. So, like I said, you got to plant the seeds. You got to plant seeds for the culture. And by doing that, instead of doing this or trying to hopefully hide your power levels, literally just forming a community and have it be a heritage, have it be sealed, where future generations could see it, and have a collective community where, you know, I'm citing you in my Substack, you're citing me, you're citing your buddy, and we're constantly citing each other and growing and bouncing off ideas.
It's a single conversation at a really large level, but it is like it's a conversation.
You get an orchestra, you get a band, basically. You know, the ideas, our beliefs, you know, trickle down from conversations between basically bandmates in terms of theory.
And I also just want to cover at the end of the article, he covers a few practical suggestions and I guess some reassurances to the failure dissident artist who's reading this, as we all are. And he suggests, you know, avoiding virtue signaling on social media, focusing on the craft and the art, like you guys said, basically going monk mode, you know, or semi-monk mode as much as you can, preserve your productivity in your mind. And then my favorite point he says is don't expect money, which I think is something a lot of people need to get in their heads, that you can't just turn on a camera and, you know, all of a sudden be making money right away.
That's for all artists.
You're in a minority. Yeah. And he also has a lecture about, I think you referenced this earlier, Gabe, about avoiding too much exposition,
right-wing
exposition, forcing your opinions into it. And just, he ends with a call just to keep grinding, keep working. And so I just want to comment, because I feel like we listed a bunch of points where we disagree or we had more detail to add. And I want to point out, this was a very brief article. Obviously, he was trying to condense a lot into a small space. But overall, I agree with the vast majority of what he's saying here. I think we just had some further thoughts about some of the complexity about disengaging from the social media dynamic and just the commentariat, the developing scene and how we see it. To go back to your comment, Gabe, and I just described it as a conversation, and I think that's what we're doing here too. You know, we're just capturing our follow-on thoughts to what Cosmo laid out.
Yeah, it's a jam session for all intents and purposes.
But it's a small enough scene that, like, you can just jump right in, and you will get people to react to you. Like, we're just a couple of you know, mental derelicts, deranged weirdos who just got together and started doing this, and or Substack, and we had, you know, notable people within the scene would respond directly, retweet, send supportive comments and things like that. So it's a surprisingly small world when you dip your toe into it, if you have any interest in it, or if you just want to read it and observe, like I have done for the most part. I've always found it really rewarding. It's a space to try and be a thought leader and to try and, I guess, try your best to keep up with a lot of people that are frankly smarter than us, who are you know, really, really trying to explore ideas
and keep the fire alive. Really
save the West.
Yes, save the West. You know, you could be the coal. We're coal miners, all right? We get the coal to burn the fire and to find the gems. That's it. We're preservers and we're foragers. That's what we are.
Yeah.
No, not that kind of coal.
You got to pay the coal toll.
I had no other thoughts. Did you guys have anything else you wanted to...
For me, reading this article, especially since I hadn't read it in a week and having to reread it while we were doing this recording, what immediately sticks out to me is the difference between someone who comes into this field from a political point of view and then starts writing because it's a way to contact and create connections with other people versus someone who started writing initially and then because of their reaction to the political sphere, to the culture of the modern United States, fell into it from the other side. It's sort of like being a physicist and going in and working on something specific versus coming out of school as an electrical engineer and then going and working as a physicist. You come into it, but you're both doing similar jobs at the end of the day. But for me, I think it's more valuable to be, as the article mentions, an artist first and a politician-focused person second. But that, to me, is of course, just a no-brainer because I've always been an artist first and I've never been politically minded second or even third or fourth or fifth. It's never been something that I have to decorrupt out of my art, if that makes any sense. So,
No, I was going to say, you know, the whole concept of politics is fundamentally leftist. You know, bringing back Nick Land. I mean, try imagine, like, you know, Suleiman the Magnificent of the Ottoman Empire. You know, the shadow of Allah himself, and say, are your policies right wing or are they left wing? You know, and in a proper healthy society, politics doesn't exist. You know, because everything is healthy. It's whatever's best for the situation. I do things to make my people beautiful and to do what keep them healthy. I do art that keeps my psychologically helpful and they're beautiful right. And healthy and true.
And this is just my personal take on it, but I think art should be something that comes from within the artist and not something that is made to be sold or commercialized. Now, that's not to say you can't go out and sell and commercialize it as long as that within you is the core of what you're trying to do, because that is also just a way to connect with people, right? Your artwork can be a way to discover things about yourself, which then you want to share. It's not grifting. It's not selfish. There's a word I'm looking for and I can't remember. But if you want to write to communicate with other people, that's perfectly fine. It should be your job as an artist to discover what the purpose of your art is and then follow it. But in my opinion, you should use art as a discovery tool for yourself and worry about how to get it in the other people's hands later when you know what you're trying to do with yourself.
Right. It's the archaeology of the spirit, basically, in a sense.
All right. Cap, did you have anything you didn't have a chance to get in?
I feel like I've said my piece.
Yeah, and I would just say, you know, in closing, I agree with the vast majority of what is being said. I just think there's a lot of layers of reasons it's difficult to disengage with this sort of social media scene. And so it's kind of a necessary evil to some extent, but I like a lot of Cosmo's suggestions and about disengaging with it as much as possible and avoiding, because it's something I think we've as a group bashed a lot on whenever we see it is people doing direct political analogs to, you know, in their fiction. All right. And so with that, go ahead, Gabe.
I was about to say we are the distant art's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Let me just say that publicly, you know, because I've said this to our own internal chat. It really is like a shitty feeling for us because we're humble Amazon link affiliate salesmen. And so we post that under a video. And then if you give a negative review to it, it does tick in your head. Like, obviously, I'm planning to make maybe $2 a year to share with you guys over Bitcoin. So I'll lose it all in fucking transaction fees. But you're like, oh, like I could have, in theory, if I really praised this, it might have sold. You know, there was that relationship with art as product when you are part of a little ecosystem of like, oh, am I actually promoting the selling of this? If I am in some way connected to the success of it, you know, either directly via like an affiliate link or indirectly in terms of a scene or via relationships, you know, like I would say we have people that probably think less of us in the scene or may want to pretend we don't exist because we didn't give the best review to something they did. And so far, I want to be clear, no one's ever reached out or said any negative in the least, but it's just a reality of it.
Yeah, no, it's a reality. And that's the hazard of like trying to give frank criticism. It is. That's just how it goes. And if the standard right now is hug box, then, we don't want to be a hurt box, but, something that's more balanced is going to seem hostile to some.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the mead shack, bro.
Yeah. I mean, as bred to plants, you know, we get our money from Vosh and ContraPoints and Chapo Trap House. You know, we make a good enough living being subversive.
To be clear,
being rootless cosmopolitan.
To be clear, would cash that check for sale. You know how to reach me. Slide into my DMs. Yeah.
Listen, if we don't get the Thiel bucks, we'll get those Voss bucks.
See, I'm playing both sides, so I'll always come out on top.
We're centrists.
Dave the Distributor did a hilarious comparison. He made an Excel spreadsheet once. I think it's still publicly viewable of monthly income from donos and like different things between left and right, leftoids and rightoids. Like ContraPoints made like 30K a month or something ridiculous to make two videos a year compared to, you know, you have like the most, I don't know, whoever the most influential guy, like Dave the Distributor Steven, who he's not like huge, but I'd say he's like very intellectually influential or something like that, who's making like 20 bucks a month or something, you know, insulting in comparison, just to
maybe back, yeah,
show the level of institutional funding. And some of these guys get like little CIA funding, like the other one that transitioned Philosophy Tube, like he literally got MI6 yep. funding during COVID to like talk about COVID. So yeah, it's not a fair playing field. So anyway, all I'd say, Cosmo, we're on your side. I think we agree with you on just about everything. Hopefully we had a few caveats and we'll end it there for this round in the mead shack, in the mead house,
the mead hall. Mead hall, you boomer.
Remember to like, subscribe, yeah. follow us on Twitter, find out where Miles lives, go to Miles's house, burn across in his front lawn.
Can't get me. I'm literally in Mongolia.
He's in Ulaanbaatar. Find out where he's tethered his horse. Feed it. Feed it something that's poisonous to horses, whatever that is.
You can kidnap Nick Land. You can go to China.
And make him finish that
Bitcoin book.
The yogurt yurt.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night. A child of winter cannot understand a summer fetish, all right?